Notwithstanding all of that, another awful fact is that we know that demand for water will exceed supply by 40% in only 2 decades. One issue that we kind of link this lack of care about water risk and real understanding is the fact that it's severely undervalued. Companies' water bills, both in terms of water use and wastewater, is just the tip of the iceberg. Whereas in actual fact, water is a material business asset, and the full value of water is generally much higher than users realize. If we look at water stress by country, this is a water stress map showing what we think water stress will look like in 2050. It's not that dissimilar from the stress map today. One issue that we have is that there's actually a negative correlation between water prices and water scarcity. And that's not just the price of the incoming water, but that's also the price of outgoing wastewater. So if you look at these areas where water scarcity and water stress are key issues, you'll see that actually there is in fact a negative correlation between water price and water scarcity. And to add another awful statistic to the list, we actually see that where the top populations are, where the fastest growing economies are, and where the biggest economies are, there also seems to be increasing water stress. You'll see that London and Paris also make that list, as well as many other countries and cities that we already know are going to suffer from water risk in the future. In fact, it's predicted that some countries are actually going to lose 6% of their growth of their GDP. We're also assuming that 45% of global GDP is actually at risk, specifically due to water scarcity issues. And so I won't go into too much detail on tourism, as it's not my speciality. But one thing that we're seeing is that tourism's biggest opportunity is also its biggest risk. Obviously, the link I'm making here is that if we have more middle-class people by 2030, that means more tourists. We already have 10.2% GDP contributed by the travel and leisure industry. But at the same time, we have a situation where popular travel destinations tend to be islands, they tend to be places where water is scarce, and people tend to want to go there in the driest months of the year. And touching very quickly on the ITP Destination Water Index, which I know is something that maybe you might touch on as well, this is actually a study that was done using Trucost's and Ecolab and Microsoft's Water Risk Monetizer. And this is actually looking at the top destination cities in the world and calculating what their risk premium is. So this number that you'll see down the middle is actually their water risk premium. That is the number of times their water bill could be compared with what they're currently paying. And that's not just taking into consideration water stress and water scarcity, it's taking into consideration population density, it's taking into consideration fresh water, it's taking into consideration water pollution. There are many different metrics which have gone into calculating that, and these were the cities that were considered to be the highest risk. So that's what the Water Risk Monetizer looks like. Many of our clients use this to understand what their revenue at risk is in reality. So that would be the water risk premium. This is what you're likely to be paying as time goes on for your water bill, as regulation improves, as water shortages get worse, as water gets dirtier. And the revenue at risk is then a huge figure for some of our clients. And this can then inform some of the positive things they do. So I don't want to say much more, as I know that you have a lot to say about opportunities, but just to touch on the fact that where there is bad risk, and I don't want to paint a really negative picture, there is often really big opportunities. A big opportunity to make the business case internally, to be a first leader in these areas. I know that Whitbread's Premier Inn branch have already managed to recycle 735,000 litres every month, which is a quarter of what they use in its entirety every month. And that is in Abu Dhabi. So they're taking a leadership role. And many clients work with us to use these metrics to plan ahead and think, what can we do in the future in order to safeguard ourselves against water risk and really find a true business opportunity which doesn't just do the right thing, but it also makes good business sense. Thank you.
Thanks very much indeed, Jacqueline. So, Helen Davies from the Department of Economic Development and Tourism in the Western Cape. We'll go to you next.
Thank you very much. So essentially, everyone knows we've gone through quite a serious crisis, water crisis in Cape Town and in the Western Cape. We're not totally out of the crisis yet, but we're very much past the worst. I'm just going to touch on how we got into the crisis, but also how we avoided a complete crisis, how we actually avoided running out of water, and briefly touch on the role that the tourism sector played in this crisis. So this diagram basically shows you the black line. It's accumulated rainfall over a year at one key point within Cape Town, one of our key weather stations. The black line in the center of the blue band is the average annual rainfall, and that blue band illustrates the range around that average. The pink line illustrates the rainfall we had in 2015. The burgundy line, the rainfall we had in 2016, and the dark purple line, the rainfall we had in 2017. And this shows us, and this was a huge wake-up call for us, everyone knows about the potential of climate change, but none of us expected it to hit this quickly. So what did our dams actually look like? This is one of our biggest dams, the Tiavatus Kloof Dam, one of the biggest dams that feeds the Western Cape supply system, including the city of Cape Town, and it prints a pretty dire picture. As an average, our dams reach 16.6%. But what is absolutely key is that Cape Town and the Western Cape didn't actually run out of water. So there was a lot of international media that showed pictures of people queuing to collect spring water. We never actually got to that point. The plans were ready in case we got there. So the big question is, how did we avoid that? Top left of the slide points to a partnership approach. We had a huge partnership approach between government, between civil society, business, and academia. All those parties coming together to work together collectively to solve the issue. Huge amount of communication in terms of what everyone could do from a household level, a business level, etc., to reduce water. See on the bottom just a couple of pictures, just massive campaigns run across the Western Cape province with local people, with tourists, with business and industry, exhibition style, one-on-one support in businesses, etc. We worked with, I ran the economic security work stream through this drought, and we worked with thousands of businesses really understanding their processes and trying to help them improve their efficiencies through technology or through behavior change or through new supplies. So in terms of what we managed to achieve, just a couple of months ago, the city of Cape Town was actually awarded an international award for having saved 55% of its water or reduced its water use by 55% in 3 years. Just to give you a comparison, the average water use per person per day was down to 87 litres. Melbourne got to 147 litres in their millennium drought, which took them a period of 12 years. And California got to 286 in winter and 387 litres per person per day in summer. So it was a radical achievement, but it was only achieved by everyone together. Particularly the business side, we had businesses that saved anything from 30% to over 85% without putting in their own water systems. So this is purely through identifying and repairing leaks, through behavior change, through improved efficiencies of their technology. And then that last bit, those businesses that went off-grid put their own systems in place, whether that be rainwater, groundhold water, etc. But it really showed us how much waste was in the system and how much we could actually tighten belts. In terms of the tourism sector particularly, the tourism sector was one of the real champions through the crisis. The tourism sector was hard hit. It was hard hit by international media and by the sense of be responsible, don't go to Cape Town. Whereas the Western Cape relies, I think 330,000 jobs in the Western Cape rely on the tourism sector. And they worked out the percentage of water used by tourists coming to Cape Town was a tiny proportion of what was used by residents and industry. So the tourism sector got together. They signed a massive charter or pledge or commitment to improve their water use. Huge campaigns were run across the Western Cape, encouraging tourists and visitors to save like a local. And we had the bottom right just depicts a picture of various efforts that hospitality industry particularly made to help tourists use less water. So, you know, a lot of humor was brought in. Ducks, where you could replace your duck for a bath plug if you insisted on having a bath. And it just, I think people took it really well and took it lightly as well. So this fact has already been mentioned, the fact that many cities in the world are currently water challenged and that we're set to exceed our water supply by 40% by 2030. And for me, the wake-up call is that collectively we need to learn, collectively we need to share our experiences to help others, particularly in the tourist sector, to avoid the kind of crisis that we could have been facing. So where to from here? Our key focus now is building long-term resilience. So we don't regard this as a once-off drought. We don't know what's going to happen in the future. So the top left depicts pictures of the city of Cape Town particularly, but also all our municipalities are actively building alternative and diversified water supplies, whether those be boreholes, desalination plants, encouraging rainwater tanks on businesses, in households, etc. But what is also being closely looked at is depicted in the top right, which is clearing of alien vegetation, which absorbs a lot of water in our catchment areas. So that's become a huge job creator and has been part of the Working for Water program in South Africa for a number of years. But bottom left depicts that we will continue to drive efficiency campaigns and to really encourage people to value water. It speaks to the pricing of water, so the cost of water has certainly gone up. And what we need to look over time is how should water be costed to enable economic growth, but to ensure that people use water in a fit-for-purpose manner. We're also actively working with the water sector businesses, those who provide services and technologies, and enabling them to commercialize, to find financing, etc., so that they're available for municipalities, households, and businesses to improve what they're doing. And we will continue working in this multilateral, multi-stakeholder manner to really take things forward. And then my last slide is just the new campaigns going out at the moment is please come back to Cape Town, come back to the Western Cape. It's the place where you can do business, you can go rock climbing, you can go wine tasting, you can sail in the ocean, climb the mountain. It is an incredible destination. And we encourage anyone who's stayed away because of the drought, please come back. Thank you.
Thanks very much indeed, Helen. Yeah. Can we go straight to the next presentation, please?
So following on from the two presentations, I wanted to talk about what the industry is doing, but my slides are still not moving, Harold.
They're working on it.
Okay. So we've heard about what's happened in Cape Town and in Sao Paulo, but if I look at some of the more recent news reports this summer, there are also news of drought and water scarcity emerging from even Europe and as far as New South Wales and Australia. So Germany and a few other places are on the radar. So it's pretty obvious that there are many more Cape Towns that are waiting to happen if we don't think about our water usage. So those are just some images of news items that have come over the summer I was talking about. And like I said, there are many more Cape Towns that are waiting to happen. So if you look at water consumption in the tourism industry, and what does this actually mean? In many of the most popular tourist destinations, on average, a local household uses anything between 100 to 500 litres of water a day. And if you compare that with water consumption in hotels, an average hotel bedroom uses anything between 1,500 to 3,500 litres of water a day. If you add to it water consumption by guests, just purely in terms of food and beverage, that's another 2,000 to 5,000 litres of water a day. And again, other areas of hotel operations like swimming pools or an average golf course, which would use anything up to 1 million cubic meters of water a day, water consumption of hotels is huge. And in certain destinations like Barbados, Cyprus, etc., tourism accounts for about 8% of the national water consumption. So as an industry, we have to really think about what's the water footprint of our operations. If you add to that, there's nearly 800 million people today globally that do not have access to clean and safe drinking water. And that's because only 1% of fresh water in our world is actually drinkable. and compare that with a single towel in a hotel, which consumes about 15 liters of water in terms of laundry, that's quite significant. And that's why you see a lot of hotels running campaigns about towel reuse, because that's one of the most significant areas of water usage in hotels. So International Tourism Partnership, which is the organization that I represent here today, is a membership organization that works with most of the leading hotel companies in the world. And if you're not working with you, well, we'd like to work with you, so come and see me after this panel. But at the moment, we've got 15 members that represent about 15% of the industry. And the members come together largely because they recognize the scale of action that's needed is not possible by any one of the companies alone. So aligned with the Sustainable Development Goals, last year our member companies agreed to act collectively on four goals, which are largely around water, carbon, human rights, and youth employment, and looking at what they can do together to collaborate to tackle these issues. One of the key goals is water, which is about looking at water stewardship in their operations and how members can take action on it. So ITP has worked with member companies on water initiatives for several years, and one of the things we did about 6 years ago was really analyze at areas in hotel operations that are most water intensive. And what we found was that guest rooms consume about 30-odd percent of the hotel's water usage, followed by laundry and food and beverage. And so we've guided hotels to focus their action on those key areas over the past years. It's not just about looking at your footprint, but it's also because, looking at your water usage makes economic sense. So 10% of a hotel's utility bill on average is based on their water consumption. And most hotels pay for their water usage twice. They pay for water that they buy to use, even though it's an underpriced asset. They obviously pay for it. And then they pay to dispose used water safely. So there's twice that they pay. The more they buy, the more they have to dispose. And actually, it is possible that you can reduce almost 50% of your water usage in guest rooms if you take certain initiatives, right from design stage of hotels to looking at operations. So what does that mean in action? So some of the things that ITP has done with its member companies over the past few years, we launched our Hotel Water Measurement Index, which is a tool that our member companies use, and actually any hotel in the world can use it. It's free to download it from our website. And that looks at water usage in your operations and benchmarks it against other hotels in your area, so you can really identify as an individual hotel what are the best areas to take action in. We've published earlier this year guidelines to water stewardship in hotels, which are basic criteria that hotels can use as they're thinking about water stewardship. And as a result of this, across 5,500 hotels where we've measured, we've managed across the board to save about 7.5% water across the hotels. You mentioned the Water Risk Index, which is a publication, a report that we launched earlier this year looking at water risk in destinations across multiple criteria. And that identified Indonesia, Bali, as one of the highest risk destinations in the world. And that was followed by Mumbai in India and several parts of China, which aren't really destinations that you would associate with water risk. But actually, like I said, there are many more Cape Towns that are waiting to happen in the wings. So I'll give you some specific examples of member initiatives, both at portfolio level and at individual property level, that we found to be very effective. Hilton, for example, over the last 10 years, through a whole range of efforts, has managed to reduce its water usage by about 20% per square meter. And one of their most popular activities has been looking at laundry technologies across almost 50% of their portfolio that have reduced water consumption by 40%. Staff training is another big thing that hotels can do, and Hilton's done very well, because normally staff in hotels aren't really aware of water being an issue, so it's very important to take staff on the journey. And Hilton are now beginning to launch context-based pilots in high-risk destinations, which are looking at water stewardship in different geographies. If you look at Radisson is, again, another hotel company that has reduced about 30% operational efficiency across its operations in its portfolio. Big campaigns around towel reuse, which have been very effective. And actually, across the range of initiatives that they've done, they've saved about 36 million gallons of water, which are, enough to fill 14 Olympic-sized pools. So lots of little things that make a difference at the portfolio level. Hyatt, I'll give you an example of an initiative in Pune, which they launched, which was done in response to local water scarcity. And that saved about 200 million gallons of water almost every month. So over a nine-month period raised, it saved 1.8 million gallons of water, largely by looking at reusing water, treated water, in their air conditioning and heating systems. NH Hotel Group in Cape Town, Helen mentioned several examples of initiatives in Cape Town, again removed bath plugs from hotels and looked at using harvested rainwater or recycled grey water for cleaning purposes and made significant savings for that. And little guest initiatives that they did, which was around installing 2-minute sand timers in hotel rooms so people could have shorter showers and really focus on water usage. And NH is only one example of Cape Town. A lot of our member hotels were working on many different initiatives in the city. In Maldives, again, another island destination that you wouldn't essentially associate with water scarcity, but that had really water issues. And Suniva, one of our members, has used a desalination plant to look at treating wastewater and actually using that in glass bottles to avoid plastics, which is another big issue that tourism faces. Use the revenue of from the sales of this treated wastewater to provide water projects to 750,000 people on the island. You mentioned Whitbread in Abu Dhabi, so I won't go into details, but Whitbread has saved about 750 litres of water every month just by using wastewater recycling systems. That's about 25% of the hotel's water usage. Intercontinental in Chengdu in China is focusing on a lot of various options to reduce its water usage in operations and launching several context-based pilots in China and India to focus on activity. Nearly done. So what could you do if you were a hotel company and wanted to come along on the journey? Well, I'd really encourage you to think of using some of the ITP tools, which are free to download from our website, to really understand your water footprint and be able to manage it. Look at incorporating water stewardship in your operations. Think of water risk when you think about your hotel development pipelines and look at growing your portfolio. Think of water in your supply chain, products like beef, linen and textiles that hotels buy, or even coffee. They are really water-intensive products, and if you can do something in your supply chain to manage that, that'll really make a difference in the communities. And again, look at water usage in the communities that you operate in. Hotels consume a lot more water in communities, and it's our responsibility as a responsible industry to focus on putting water back in the communities we take it from. So I'd like to end with that. Thank you, Harold, for having me, and thank you all for listening.
Thanks very much indeed.